The last case on our calendar is 002287, Disciplinary Counsel versus Randall Pease. Mr. Pease.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve a couple of minutes of time on this one. And I'd like to start at the end instead of beginning. And that is to thank the court for the first opportunity to address the question of the procedure in which the attorney resigned his license to practice, which I've been attempting to do for more than a year. But I didn't want to do so by serving an authorization, which is apparently now required by rule. And as a result of that, this discipline in the matters had proceeded, that they may well have it anyway. But in the course of trying to determine this resignation, I've addressed put the court's office originally with the assistance of Mr. Donchess, who was in the form to prepare, and I filled the form out and I tried to file it in court, and the clerk's office refused to accept it to file it. And I did file some copies received. They refused to accept it because they refused to sign a waiver. I discussed this with Mr. Donchess at the disciplinary counsel's office, who said that he would assist in trying to clear this matter up, but that was the last of assistance I received in that. It is my impression, or has been my impression until very recently, that by signing this waiver, I would authorize disciplinary counsel to release what is regarded as information to this court, where it may become incorporated into findings of court and released to the public. Now, in Mr. Donchess' brief, he argues for the first time in my knowledge and from the first communication I've heard from anybody connected with this court, that I have misinterpreted this rule, and it doesn't mean that what I interpret it to mean. He says that I've misinterpreted the authorization to give the relator an unmitigated right to continue to investigate him for an indefinite period of time. I do interpret it to say exactly that. I don't see any time in this authorization. I don't see any limitations on what the disciplinary counsel may say, nor do I ask for any limitations. I ask not to grant rights that don't exist. If the disciplinary counsel has these rights, he can exercise them without my permission. If he doesn't, I cannot think of a good reason why I should be required to grant them in order to surrender a license to practice law. He further says that neither the relator nor the court have ever interpreted the authorization to release this information wrongly. Well, to the best of my knowledge, I don't know what the disciplinary counsel has done. But I know of no interpretation by the court of this authorization that says that it would not use the information, which is to be distinguished from evidence, supplied by the disciplinary counsel in a disciplinary proceeding and publish that information publicly.
Counsel, what is it you don't want to publish?
What I object to the descriptions of what has happened. I realize I'm in default on the grievance, and I did not appear to defend myself on the matters currently before the court. But there are misleading, at best, representations of fact as to what happened in the two matters which are involved in this, contained in the relator's original brief and in his complaint, and again in his representations in the brief filed with this court. I would like to have those assertions of fact clarified. There are two cases. One of them is a simple malpractice case in which we failed to find an expert witness who can testify, partly as a result of the client's own failure to cooperate with the expert witness that I have. The representations, if they go unchallenged, would suggest that I simply abandoned the client.
Why didn't you appear at the what I would see to be a $2 million default judgment hearing?
Because I'm penniless, and I was uninsured, and I had no reason to defend the case.
Well, counsel, on this matter of resignation, we now have this proposal that you resign with the designation of resign with disciplinary action pending.
It is. I don't know what the options are. I have tried to talk to Mr. Donchess in court, and this is my first chance to do it.
Well,
I don't even know.
How'd you get clear here without just offering the design? I mean, you do understand that if you have a case that goes through the process, there's a written opinion that's going to describe what you did. And it's, if you didn't appear, it's going to describe what you did on the basis of what was presented. And you're not going to have any opportunity to modify that. If you design, it's just going to, isn't the publicity simply going to be that you resign with disciplinary action pending?
If that were the option, Your Honor, I would be perfectly satisfied. I've already indicated.
Why haven't you figured that out before we're here?
Because I can't talk to anybody here. I come here and ask, and nobody will talk to me. I can't talk to Mr. Gontrax. He won't answer my questions, or he doesn't know. I don't know which.
Did you submit a resignation letter?
Yes, I did. I submitted the form that Mr. Donchess provided me. I did not submit the affidavit or waiver. And when I went to the clerk's office to see if there was some other way to talk to anybody in this court about it, they said no.
You mean when you get the form to resign, they now give you a waiver attached?
Authorization and release is called. And I think it's in the record here. It's attached.
When was that you wanted to submit your resignation?
I wish Your Honor had the date.
I mean, was it a year ago?
It's been about a year ago.
Okay. Probably, and I would think that Mr. Donchess would tell you that waiver simply allows them to proceed with an investigation so that they can determine whether your resignation should be with designation as disciplinary action pending or without. Those are the two resignations we have today. The disciplinary counsel has to make an investigation before the resignations are accepted.
I now understand. That is not what Mr.
Donchess. And now, by proceeding today, as Justice Piper has stated, we're ready to proceed. We'll make a decision on what the sanction should be, and then this opinion will be public.
I wish I had the opportunity to ask the court about these matters and to have the guidance that I'm now getting before today. But I haven't had that chance, and I have asked. I've gone to all the places I know to ask.
Well, we'll hear from Mr. Donchess and tell us.
Counsel, we have published rules on all of this and the procedures set forth, and part of the obligation, because there were members of this court concerned that people were resigning, and that was too easy in certain circumstances. We don't automatically accept resignation. And so there has to be a follow-up and a report of what you've done and a recommendation to us as to whether or not we even accept a resignation. And that's all spelled out in rules that are available in any law library and available for your reading.
I have seen the rules and I may have misinterpreted them. I did not find when I was asked to sign this authorization, if there is any limitation whatsoever on what I'm authorizing the disciplinary counsel to do, except to submit it subject to the rule. And it does not have any authorization to say that after it's been submitted and the recommendations have been made, I have any right to say to anybody that he didn't get the facts right, which in this case he didn't. That's where my problem is. I don't even, for my own sake, if you find any bad things about me, you choose to find based on the evidence rather than what Mr. Donchess says. It isn't a big problem. What's the problem for me is I have two ex-wives and two adult children in this community who are going to be humiliated. This report, which is not correct, is published in the disciplinary actions. Now, this report is full of factual and I could talk, but I forfeited my chance.
Well, I think we publish our entries when somebody the entries are public. Certainly, the entries that indicate that somebody has resigned with disciplinary action pending. But that's all it says. Nothing about the details of the complaint or complaints against you.
I would be, and would have been, given a chance, happy to have that finding. As I said to Mr. Donchance in the deposition that's in the record in this case, he pointed out and questioned me, have you kept up your CLE? No. Have you paid your registration? No. You know you can be, have your license suspended for that. I said, fine, do it. But that will result in that. I'm not asking to keep my license. I'm asking not to have this misleading distortion of facts.
Are you prepared to sign those documents today if we were prepared to accept them? I don't know that we are.
If the court is saying to me, well, I understand Your Honor has just said, I would go forward with that today. That would not be this minute.
Well, there's no guarantee. I'm just asking you, before you leave the courtroom, are you willing to
yes.
sign that?
With the understanding.
For that to be in the mix, we consider what we're going to do.
Yes. With the understanding, an explanation you just gave me, I used.
Well, but wait a minute. Wouldn't you understand that with or without the signing of an authorization release, that the disciplinary council, when we accept the resignation with designation of disciplinary matter pending, they would have a right to continue it anyway with or without a release?
Yes, I don't think that I have any power to listen to
that's
the
what
disciplinary
I would think.
Council's actions. I never asserted any such power. I say I shouldn't have to grant more rights than the disciplinary council already has.
You have at least 2 minutes left. You have at least 2 minutes left. Thank you. Mr. Donchance.
May it please the court. Great weight in this case should be given to the fact that the respondent avoided our investigation beginning on May 12, 1999 until the present. The only time he has ever contacted my office in that entire period from May 12, 1999 was when he stopped by to pick up the resignation form. He did not ask to see me. He walked in, picked it up from the secretary, and left. That is the only time that this man has willingly, voluntarily contacted my office. And he's misleading you when he says that he has tried to talk to me on numerous occasions. He absolutely has not. And in fact, from May 12th of 1999, until we served him with the subpoena for the September 1999 deposition, we spent an inordinate amount of time trying to find him. We had two full-time investigators looking for him all over the city of Columbus. He had changed his attorney office address to a P.O. box. He had moved his residence without telling the attorney registration office. And we were finally able to locate him after many months of searching at his place of employment. That is the truth of what happened in this case.
With or without the authorization, you have the right to proceed, don't you?
We absolutely have the right to proceed.
So you don't need the authorization. All you need is the resignation.
The authorization is required by rule, though, so that we can give you the sealed report. We can't give you the sealed report because we run into a confidentiality problem.
You mean every one of these that we voted on, resignation accepted with designation of disciplinary matter pending, there's been a release and authorization signed?
Yes, Your Honor. That's what the clerk requires for filing, and that's what the rule requires. It's a two-part form. Page one is an affidavit saying I want to resign. And page two is I allow disciplinary counsel to waive the confidentiality rule for sole purposes of filing the sealed report to the court. Otherwise, in some cases, we couldn't tell you the information we had in our investigation so that you could determine whether it's resignation pending or not.
Once a resignation is filed, though, disciplinary counsel loses jurisdiction because the person's no longer a member of the bar.
When it's filed or after your order comes out?
Ordered. Yeah.
After your order
comes out. I mean, it's not like you're going to pursue anybody who's resigned. You can't, really, can you?
No, we agree with you, Your Honor. Once the order comes out from the court, we're finished. But before the order comes out, while the resignation is still pending, we do have an obligation to write the sealed report.
I know.
And so that's how we interpret this rule, and that's how we've interpreted it since it's been written. And that was explained to a respondent in September of 1999, and his response in the deposition was, well, I'll believe that when I check with other sources. And then we never heard from him again.
Well, let's proceed to the merits of this case since there was any resignation filed.
The merits of the case, he has raised two issues here. He's telling you that there are false information in the formal complaint, and there absolutely is not false information in the formal complaint. If there was, he had an opportunity to rebut it by coming to the formal hearing or giving the information during the course of the investigations that could have concluded the investigations if what he says is true. And we never would have even gotten to the formal complaint, but instead he deliberately ignored us. So we had to go through all this trouble to write a formal complaint and come to you today. The first matter is the Kleinbrough matter. And while these arguments are waived, I'll briefly address this. He claims that there was no $2 million judgment, but in fact there was a $2 million judgment put out by the trial court. That was appealed. When I wrote the formal complaint and it was filed on August 3rd, 2000, there was no decision in that appeal. So the information in the formal complaint was absolutely correct. The same day that I filed the complaint, the Court of Appeals put out a memo. They did not publish a decision. They simply put out a memo, gave it to both the parties but not to anyone else, that said we are reversing on the issue of punitive damages, but not on the issue of liability and not on the issue of actual damages. We learned of that opinion for the first time when he filed his objections, because of course he was ignoring us and he hadn't provided us with that information. That's the Kleinbrough case. The Shellhorn case, this was a case where Mr. Pease was hired by the Shellhorns to assist in a settlement of the claims, but the claims had already been pretty much negotiated between the Shellhorns and the defendant. He achieved conclusion of the settlement for $62,000, and as he admitted in the deposition, he accepted the check and he put it in his IOLTA account. That money was never turned over to any of the suburb boards. It was never turned over to the clients. It was never accounted for. We asked him about that in the deposition. His response, it's in litigation. I asked him to provide him with the pleadings, give me a case number, give me a case caption, tell me what court we're in, anything so that I could research this case. He gave me absolutely nothing. And he walked out of that deposition and he never contacted me again. That's a failure to cooperate. We have since learned that since his objections were filed, that in October of 2000, this is after the complaint was filed, this is after the respondent was already in default. So in October of 2000, Judge Travis, in the Court of Common Pleas down here in Franklin County, made an award for the Shellhorns of $24,000 in damages, based on the fact that Mr. Pease kept that $62,000 in his IOLTA account, refused to account for it or turn it over, and based on the fact that the Shellhorns had to sue to get that money accounted for. That decision includes a very specific finding that Mr. Pease misused client funds, and for whatever reason, Judge Travis never certified that to us, but that does include a finding that he misused client funds. So there is nothing in that complaint that is inaccurate. He is subject to punitive damages, it's just the amount that is at issue in the Kleinbrough matter. But that's an issue he could have taken care of had he showed up at the hearing. The Shellhorn matter, he was specifically found to have misused client funds, and they were given an award of $24,000. There's nothing inaccurate about that complaint. Again, he could have put that information before the court. These were all issues that he could have talked about had he decided to come to the hearing. And these cases were resolved a little differently than was presented in the complaint, only because they were resolved after the complaint was filed and while Mr. Pease was in default. And he never took the opportunity to come and tell us about it. So today, we are recommending a sanction to you of an indefinite suspension from the practice of law. And we have considered several aggravating factors that you have mentioned in your case law. And as I said in the beginning of my comments, I think that great weight should be given to the fact that we've gone to extraordinary expense and spent a lot of time investigating this case, and he has failed to cooperate for over 1 year, and he has defaulted on the formal complaint. And if this is truly to be a self-governing profession, then we should hold these attorneys accountable when they deliberately and willfully ignore our attempts to to any of thwart our attempts to find out the truth behind the grievances. And when we spend time and money trying to find them so that we can serve a simple letter of inquiry on them, they have a duty to cooperate, they have a duty to answer the formal complaints. And nothing today has given him an excuse or an extraordinary circumstance that would merit his ignorance in this case. We have looked at several aggravating factors. First among them is his failure to cooperate. He has also undeniably caused harm to his clients. The Kleinwills had to sue him, the Shelhorns had to sue him. Kleinwills lost a medical malpractice claim simply because Mr. Peace failed to identify an expert. That's what the basis of the summary judgment is. It's not call the expert, have him testify. It's identify the expert for discovery. All he had to do was put a name on a piece of paper.
Well, now, wait a minute. It's got to be a good case for identifying an medical expert. Isn't quite that easy.
I absolutely understand, but
and you could be bringing somebody in here who just is throwing bogus names down, identifying people who aren't really prepared to say what's essential to the case in the first place.
Absolutely, but in this case, the court never had the opportunity to decide whether he was bringing in a legitimate expert.
So that's his $2 million false judgment is for not identifying an expert in an if-come medical malpractice case.
It's a little more than that. The summary judgment motion was filed and he simply abandoned his clients. He never filed a response. He could have filed a 41A dismissal. He could have asked for an extension of time. He simply just abandoned the clients, never told them that it was filed, and their subsequent attorney later found out that the case was dismissed. So that's the whole package. But it does start from an interrogatory asking him to identify and a medical expert, and he refused to do it.
Counsel, yes. Mr. Peace has indicated to clarify the standing of the resignation that he would sign a resignation today. We know resignations are true this far. The resignation. Are we better off, or is there a reason why you should not accept the resignation because it's been permanent? Is there a reason not to do that? Or to make the case to the conclusion with putting your partner?
The reason we recommended an indefinite suspension was because we were basing that on the facts we had prior to the objections being filed. Now that we know more from the objection, it's possible a harsher sanction is warranted. And obviously, he's admitted that he deliberately and willfully ignored our process. Now, that's not the same as what you just heard from Mr. Kepler, or you believe his arguments or not, but that's probably even more aggravating. He's also under a CLE suspension by his own admission, and he's failed to register. He still hasn't told his former clients that. So there's a problem there. He filed objections with this court without legal support. He filed objections with contrary info to the information that he gave me in the deposition.
I understand all that, but my question is there a reason why we should not accept the resignation now, if the resignation was obligated to do something that is there a reason in your mind we should let the case proceed versus accepting the resignation, which saves us work of writing opinion and all that? I don't want to be talking to that, not the underlying merits of the case.
I understand, Your Honor. My problem is that our recommendation is in the form of a sealed report, so I'm not sure if I can tell you on the record what our recommendation would be. It is entirely up to you whether you accept that resignation.
Well, it's quite obvious that if he submits it, you would not even have to do an investigation, if I understand your problem. If he submits a resignation, there is in fact this disciplinary action pending, you would simply recommend to us that the resignation be accepted with designation if there's a disciplinary action pending.
That could be the case, but I...
You wouldn't have to submit anything to us under seal because we have it right here.
I think the rule requires us to, though. That would be the only thing we'd have to follow. The
rules can be waived.
In any case, that's That's the case we have to present to you today, and we are asking for an indefinite suspension. We ask you to find that his substantive arguments in the underlying case were waived and not properly before this court, and that his arguments concerning the affidavit of resignation were also waived because they were not brought up in the board hearing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Donchance. Mr. Pease, you've saved a little over 2 minutes of your time. Let me begin with a question. We have a recommendation from the board, as you know, indefinite suspension. You have some interest in resigning from the practice of law. Why should we not disbar, assuming that we don't receive a resignation from you, why should the sanction not be disbarment, since you don't want to practice? They're fairly egregious complaints against you. Why would we grant an indefinite suspension when you don't want to practice law anyway?
Well, Your Honor, disbarment, my impression, this is the only disgrace of the profession, in this profession. We're doing really terrible things. I'm not accused of any criminal acts except in my conscience. This is a case where, first of all, he's completely misrepresented the facts on Shelburne matter. He will go into detail on that if you ask me for. There's money in my trust account to pay the Shell one, subject to some other things, and Mr. Donchance has known them for a long time. Never took the money, never went anywhere except into my trust account. It isn't $62,000, it's $10,000. The fine bill case is simply a matter that I sent the client to a qualified expert. He wanted a guy down in Chillicothe who was not board certified in orthopedic surgery to testify against a local surgeon here. I wanted him to go with the veteran, and he refused to cooperate with that fellow. We didn't have an expert witness. I tried to talk to the fellow and show a copy. Wasn't able to do so. The motion for summary judgment was filed. We had nothing to oppose it with, and I allowed it.
That's what your lights on it is, and you alluded to $10,000 you're holding in the trust account. And I think the recommendation is that we give you an indefinite, and one of the conditions be that you pay up on the $10,000, and you just put some caveat on that. What is that? Why are you holding back on the $10,000?
Well, as Mr. Gonchetz knows, my trust account was embezzled in an amount of over $150,000 by my former secretary, and there's been a lot of litigation out there, which involved restitution to a number of other people. And I intend to make restitution through that trust account to the people whose money was stolen by my former secretary.
So the $10,000 isn't available?
The $10,000, as far as I'm concerned, has prior lien, but it can be affected with the judgment. But more than that, if you found it, please support it.
I see.
I know my time is running out.
Thank you, Mr. Pease. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Marshal, please adjourn court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now.